Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I am James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. I'm sorry to see Melinda leave, but I'm sure she'll have a huge impact in her future philanthropic work. We have got that story plus Scamdemic Treaty incoming, but first, previously on Crashes of Convenience. Iran launches probe into president's death in helicopter crash. Iran has assigned a high-ranking delegation to investigate the May 19 helicopter crash that killed President Ibrahim Raisi and his accompanying team of senior officials, including the nation's foreign minister. The delegation has been dispatched to the site of the incident. The investigation's already started. The results of the investigation will be announced later when the mission's completed. Iran's interior mission described the accident, and this is the first sort of reportage we were getting. Oh, it was a hard landing due to the weather conditions. In an interview aired on state TV on Monday, he said the esteemed president and company were on their way back aboard some helicopters, and one of the helicopters was forced to make a hard landing due to the bad weather and fog. Late President Raisi was heading to the city of Tabriz in the northwest of Iran, where he had been scheduled to inaugurate a project at the Tabriz oil refinery when the accident took place. Raisi had earlier traveled to the far northwestern province of East Azerbaijan for the inauguration of new dams on the morning of May 19th. President's delegation had been traveling in a convoy of three helicopters. As for the other two that were flying alongside the president's chopper, they had initiated a search for about 15 to 20 minutes after communication was lost. The president, Raisi, he was traveling in a Bell 212 model, meant to be adaptable to all sorts of situations, including carrying people, deploying aerial firefighting gear, ferrying cargo, and mounting weapons. I will include the link on the Bell 212. And the latest I have is Iran begins funerals for President Raisi and others killed. And then, of course, round up the usual suspects, sanctions, Israel. Are sanctions behind Iran's aviation crisis? Al Jazeera asking. Sanctions have been prevented Iran from procuring new aircraft or equipment which have been linked to aviation accidents. Or, it wasn't us. Israel issues clarification after Iran's president's death in helicopter crash. Experts consider the theory of Israeli involvement to be unlikely. Israel's strategic focus has typically been on military and nuclear targets rather than high-profile political assassinations. There is a bit of speculation about them tweeting about the location and all the details before anybody had heard anything. Kind of reminds me of Jane Stanley reporting on World Trade Center Building 7 while it's standing behind her. I've not confirmed or researched any of that yet, James. And the last question, who is Mohammad Mokhbar, Iran's interim president? Well, he led the Iranian supreme leader's multi-billion dollar charitable conglomerate for 14 years. James?
All right. So this is one of those stories that could, or seems like it could be, very explosive. Forgive the pun. But there's many different factors that go into this. One of which is this was a 40-year-old American-made helicopter that presumably really was on its last legs, as much of Iran's air equipment is. So there is at least a plausible scenario in which this was just an accident. It could theoretically be that, although it is always pretty implicating when a nation has to come out and say, it wasn't us, we didn't do it. But with that in mind, so I always do keep at least one eye on the feeds of various rah-rah, bricks are our saviors, multipolar New World Order cheerleaders, because I have to at least know what they're saying. And even there, I've only seen, for example, all I've seen is one video that was talking about what a great multipolar BRICS leader Raisi was, and all of these bilateral agreements and agreement with Indonesia and to trade in local currencies and that kind of, you know, multipolar BRICS world order kind of stuff. But there was no real deep dive into the mechanics of this or the mysterious things about the crash. The only thing that I could find, actually, which I found via one of those sketchy Indian news sites on ThemTube that has the, it's just dramatic music and pictures and text on screen. But they were talking about a story coming out of Turkey. So I looked it up on Al Arabiya News. Turkey says helicopter carrying Iran's Raisi did not emit any signal, which notes that since Iran fell within Turkey's area of responsibility for emergency response, authorities had checked for a signal from the helicopter upon hearing news that it had crashed. But unfortunately, we think most likely the signal system was turned off or that the helicopter did not have that signal system, he said. So, I don't know. Speculate away, and I'm sure there are many directions you could take that speculation. Obviously, Israel, America, UK, shady shenanigans, prime suspects as usual. What would be the motives for something like that? Well, you could point, for example, to this recent post on Door to Freedom. 15 nations have made their position on the WHO sovereignty grab, misleadingly spun as an equity effort, publicly known before the WHA meeting commences, noting that the Islamic Republic of Iran is one of the 11 countries on the list of countries that had informed the UN General Assembly they're not going along with the pandemic preparedness treaty, agenda, whatever. Okay, maybe. Maybe, right? Okay, I guess there's at least something speculative. But here, I think, is something that might be a little bit meatier that probably won't appeal to people in our audience because it has to do with internal politics of some foreign country. Who cares? But at first glance, there is something to be said of, well, what would Israel or anyone get out of assassinating the president of Iran? Because the president of Iran is not where the power and the political structure of Iran lies. The power lies in the Ayatollah, the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei. And he appoints a successor through some nebulous means that we can't see from the outside. He's 85 years old and due to kick the bucket any time now. So the question of who will succeed him is actually more of an important question. Now, this is where it comes in. Raisi was apparently, according to people who can't possibly know this, might have been on the inside track to be being groomed to be Khamenei's successor. But now he's out of the picture, so who's going to step up? Well, how about Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's son, Mojtaba Khamenei, who apparently people were saying a few years ago, oh, he couldn't possibly pick his son as a successor because Iran isn't a monarchy. We don't do things that way. No. This isn't hereditary. But now that Raisi's out of the way, it seems Mojtaba may be a more viable candidate to succeed Khamenei. So if you're looking for someone with means, motive, and opportunity to get rid of Raisi, maybe the son of the supreme leader. Again, it's all speculation. Speculate away. But I don't think this is going to change very much with regards to Iran. I guess we'll have to see who ultimately succeeds him as president, but as I say, that's not where the real power in the country lies anyway.
Interesting. So succession might actually be the theme of this New World Next Week episode. James, one of the things we were speculating about in the monarchy community on Monday morning when all of this was pretty much hitting, at least speculating on the how, maybe there was a suicide pilot a la JFK Jr., for folks who are familiar with that conspiratorial tale. From Flight 69221 to WHA-77, the 77th World Health Assembly, a decisive moment for the future of global health cooperation. From the Evil Horse's Mouth, UNFoundation.org, thousands of government officials, global health experts, and advocates from around the world will convene in Geneva for the World Health Assembly to deliberate, negotiate, and decide on the most pressing global health issues. Simply put, it is the preeminent health gathering of the year. With several multi-year negotiations coming to a head at once, this year's assembly will put global cooperation to the test. Between May 27th and June 1st, ministers of health and other decision makers from all 194 member states of the World Health Organization will gather for the 77th World Health Assembly, the annual meeting of the WHO's decision-making body. A range of global health issues will be discussed at WHA-77, finally defeating polio, malaria, HIV, and other diseases, increasing access to universal health coverage and immunization, countering growing antimicrobial resistance due to their overuse of antibiotics, and ensuring better maternal and reproductive health outcomes. For who? On top of this already packed agenda, deadlines for negotiations on multiple international agreements are fast approaching, which is ratcheting up the stakes for this year's assembly. All eyes are on member states that are tasked with reaching legally binding agreements on how they will work together to prevent and better respond to future pandemics. WHO officials will also present plans for its program of work for the next 4 years and launch a call for countries to fund that work through a new financing mechanism. So you get to the real heart of it. We need money. We want money. But while WHO is calling for more reliable and flexible funding, member states are asking the global body to meet their expectations through new accountability structures. Some of these expectations include greater representation of historically marginalized groups, including women, within the agency. And all of this must be addressed against the backdrop of major crises that are directly affecting people's healths, livelihoods, and survivals. James, that's the press release from the UN.
Straight from the horse's mouth. Yeah, okay, so what is going on here? For people who have no idea about any of this, well, I don't know where you've been for the past couple of years. I've been talking about this for a couple of years now, so please do, if you are new to this, search WHO, search Pandemic Treaty, search IHR in my search bar, and you can find the many, many podcast episodes, interviews, presentations, and other material that I've put out on this over the past couple of years. But yeah, all of this scamdemic nonsense, in a way, is culminating in this push towards locking it in to an international binding agreement that every country is going to start implementing, and which will prepare us for Disease X, right? Anyway, so there's a lot to catch up on if you're new to all this, but long story short, what do we know about what they are going to table, what they are going to discuss, and which way it might go at the meeting next week? Nothing, because that's the way they want it. And again, if you've been following the twists and turns in this, you will know that they broke their own rules, their own written explicit rules in their own constitution that they were supposed to table, for example, the IHR amendments 4 months in advance. But they said, yeah, you know what? We're going to break our own rules, and you guys can work on it right up to the last second. So that's exactly what they're doing. They're still having last-minute negotiations on what they are even going to be approving or not approving next week. Anyway, as I've said, at the very, very, very least, they will produce some sort of watered-down agreement in principle kind of thing, just so that they can say, well, hey, we did something. At any rate, they're not going to stop, whatever happens next week. And even if we were able to derail the entire thing, they're not going to stop. They're going to come back next time, and next time, and next time. So, it remains to be seen, but you can get a flavor of that from some of the coverage of this WHA that's taking place. For example, Health Policy Watch, I thought, had an interesting couple of articles in quick succession in a couple of days. One, on May 20th, slim chances for pandemic accord by World Health Assembly. And then by May 21st, that had morphed into member states inch closer to pandemic agreement, which just goes to show how little anyone really knows. And as I said, they're still negotiating the documents. Unfortunately, a lot of the narrative as to why countries are hesitant about it is with regards to that equity nonsense. Oh, well, we want better financing. We want a better slice of the pie, the big pharma pie that your guys are going to get out of this, rather than the fundamental topic of health freedom, which is why the only solution to this, as I have been stressing for a long time, is complete and total withdrawal from the World Health Organization. That is the only way you are going to start dismantling this international health tyranny. On that note, I will put out some interesting cookie crumbs if people haven't seen them. For example, May 10th, 2024, Peter Kotlar, the Slovak government plenipotentiary for the COVID-19 pandemic, informed that Slovakia would not support the current version of the new pandemic treaty or the draft amendment to the international health regulations. The health ministry noted that it would not support any documents weakening Slovakia's position as a sovereign state. So Tedros apparently flew in just to, please, don't do it, guys. You can't break consensus. And lo and behold, 5 days later, Slovakia's prime minister expected to survive after shooting. Some sort of random lone nut, you know, just decided to try to assassinate the Slovakian prime minister who's part of this populist party that's been pushing back against the WHO agenda. Make of that what you will. And I hope everyone's keeping track on their own local level what's happening around them, because I can say here in Japan, there's a new national movement to protect lives from the WHO, which is going to have a big rally in Tokyo on May 31st. For people who happen to be in Japan, might be interested in that. And World Council for Health Japan has this petition to get out of the WHO, to investigate the COVID vaccine deaths, etc., that is currently underway, so currently over 70,000 signatures. So there is movement happening here in Japan, everywhere else. I will be covering this with Meryl Nass in our CHD, a Good Morning CHD conversation that will be happening this weekend. But hey guys, buckle in. We'll see what happens and we'll report back.
Man, I had already forgotten about the Slovakian president. Yes, on the record, multiple times saying, we're going to investigate the shady purchases of all these vaccines. He said all the things we've been saying, shot a few days later by a far-left politician who I believe was a published poet. So that just screams Democrat to me, James. I'm pretty sure, isn't Warp Speed Swamp Thing gonna save us from the World Health Organization tyranny? He's gonna swoop right in, right? Right after we, you know, dismantle NATO and leave the UN and all those other great things. Sidebar, unrelated, put you on the spot question. Is it possible this World Health meeting will be near Bilderberg? Do we know where, when Bilderberg is?
Excellent question. That's a very good question. And this year, I have not been following that at all. So I'm going to check that as soon as we hang up. If I'm assuming, yeah, it should probably be known at this time. And it would not surprise me if it's taking place near Geneva.
That's what I'm saying. We'll find out. It's like, it's across the street from the meeting. We'll find out on that, James. We move to our third and final story, though, on this New World Next Week, episode 555. Shock, breaking news. World Economic Forum leader Klaus Schwab is stepping down, which was the style at the time, following Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, King Charles. Klaus Schwab, the founder and executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, is stepping down, Semaphore reported on Tuesday, citing an internal memo. Schwab, 86 years young, announced his decision last Thursday and is transitioning to a non-executive role by January 2025, according to Semaphore, but his decision is still awaiting approval from the Swiss government. You can't quit unless we say so. The forum's governance is also set to change the consequence of the moves, as Schwab hasn't named a successor. So they're like, what do we do about this whole successor crisis? The World Economic Forum, which Schwab totally founded all by himself in 1971, organizes a yearly gathering of world leaders in finance, economy, and politics in Davos, Switzerland, as well as several smaller events throughout the world. A spokesman for the WEF didn't immediately respond to a Bloomberg email seeking comment. I will include a link to, it's like Semaphore, what is this? Oh, it's a sketchy news site started by a bunch of sketchy insider guys. But they've been talking about a successor for a while. Politico did say back in 2023, succession has nothing on Davos, elite conclave, Mull's next leader. Succession, I was like, what? That's a TV show, because make-believe TV shows actually tell more truth than the news. Klaus Schwab will stay in office until he dies, insiders say of the World Economic Forum founder, for many years. Forum insiders said they thought Klaus Schwab's daughter, Nicole, would be anointed successor. Remember, like Nick Soros stepped down too, I forgot to mention him. Nicole Schwab holds a master's from Harvard and Cambridge and was a founding director of the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leaders, that controversial program. An uber elite of under 40-year-olds eased into the World Economic Forum's orbit each year, including figures as diverse as New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg, who is looking pretty hot. Well, he grew a beard out, James. He's got his hair a little shaggy. He doesn't look like a super freak robot anymore. He looks like the dude that would steal your girlfriend. And Kirill Dmitriev, head of Russia's sovereign wealth fund. That's quite the cast of characters. While she is still a World Economic Forum trustee, Nicole Schwab has branched out on the forum, working as an advisor to nonprofits focused on reforestation, well-being, which is always a great goal, and women's empowerment, including 1T.org, a platform for the 1 trillion tree community. And that's not all. There's more of them. Her brother, Oliver Schwab, works full-time as World Economic Forum head of technology and is a member of their 10-member managing board. He formerly led their China operations. Schwab, King Schwab, has batted away suggestions that his son is lined up to replace him, telling CNBC in 2020 he could go his own way if he wanted to. Neither Nicole nor Oliver Schwab responded to a request for comment, and Oliver's team blocked an in-person approach by a Politico reporter, which is a very fun sentence. In related news, Melinda French Gates steps down from the Gates Foundation. Don't worry, she's taken $12.5 billion with her. Bill Gates said, I am sorry to see Melinda leave, but I am sure she will have a huge impact in her future philanthropic work. James, I love how the screenwriters are now using French in her name to distinguish her. She's now a standalone character in this new storyline. French Gates also sounds like some terrible pop star. James, why are all... You could almost think that the rats are scurrying because we've stuck it to them so well that they finally realize the error of their ways and they're trying to retire and get out before we put them in the docket at The Hague, right? Right?
One would think that could be a possibility. Well, I don't know. I'm not holding my breath. But hey, I mean, they have pressed ahead to apparently try to get the indictment for Netanyahu, so who knows, right? Stay tuned, guys. Anyway, the Schwab succession question is an interesting one, I suppose, and people will know a little bit about it if they do follow the Corporate Report, because they'll remember episode 403, Meet the World Economic Forum, in which I read from the regulations of the WEF, specifically the passage, Mr. Klaus Schwab, who created the forum, or at least one member of his immediate family designated by it, is an ex officio member of the Board of Trustees. The founder himself designates his successor in the board, and so forth, for the latter's succession. If this disposition is not applicable, the Board of Trustees will decide. So there you go. If any journos were interested in this succession question, they probably should actually read the documents. I don't know. Or watch the Corporate Report at the very least. And you would know that, yeah, if Schwab doesn't appoint a successor, the Board of Trustees will. So there you go. Fascinating. Let's all get our popcorn and watch carefully. But actually, I think that this speaks to the fundamental question that I was answering in Questions for Corbett and what I said there. What happened to the WEF? In which I said, well, actually nothing whatsoever happened to it. The World Economic Forum is still in Davos doing its Davos thing. The only thing that's changed in recent years is that people aren't paying as much close scrutiny attention to them as they were back in 2020, 2021. People just got bored and moved on. And I think there's a lot of good lessons in there about attention and the power of attention. And for the hard of thinking out there, for who don't understand that message, of course I'm not telling you what to think about or what not to think about, and even if I was, why would you listen to me? But I am saying that, well, we should at least be conscious of where we are directing our attention, and is the World Economic Forum truly the thing we should be devoting our attention to? Well, maybe it is, but at any rate, you should make that decision consciously. And it's going to continue doing its Davos thing, whether it's Klaus Schwab as its figurehead or not. It's going to continue doing the exact same thing it always does and always will, because I don't think Klaus Schwab really runs anything in the world, and I don't think he's important. Speaking of people who don't really run anything and aren't ultimately important, hey, Melinda Gates, there you go. And you make the French Gates pop singer joke. Well, honestly, I think it sounds more like the latest fad in exterior decorating or something like that, but anyway, yeah, again, is that going to fundamentally change the direction of the Gates Foundation? I'm not holding my breath. The only thing that I'm wondering is if they will officially change the name of the foundation from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to the Gates Foundation. Stay tuned. Get your popcorn, guys. Let's all pay close attention to that. Well, maybe not. But I will just end on this ridiculous note. Every time you read that pull quote about, we're sorry to see her leave, but I swear I keep thinking you're going to say, but we love to watch her go, said no one ever. Anyway, on that ridiculous update, no New World Next Week sigh this week, guys.
Someone actually said that in my chat last week. Like, where's the depressed doom and sigh? James, you bring up a really great point. They'll have to change the name. And changing the names of things is always a really good move when they get too much attention. Now, to fly in the face of that, you got me thinking more. That's why I love doing these, man. Get my gears turning. We were just talking about Bilderberg. Maybe, unfortunately, we taught them all a really good lesson these last couple of decades. And they went public and loud and said, here's Bilderberg.org. Here's every single thing we're doing, and now you won't pay attention at all. So they were, both of us, what? We were better off when they were in the secret and we were exposing them. Now that they're completely exposed, what are we left with? That's right. Why they
well,
can say,
completely
look
exposed,
at these conspiracy
right.
theorists.
Yeah, exactly. It's the limited hangout. Hey guys, here's our public website and our public agenda and our public meeting list and attendee list. Don't worry guys, it's all public, which is, of course, nonsense, but it's
but
good enough for
the,
most people.
A great way to hide things in plain sight. And anytime you would now bring this up to our conspiracy-averse friends, it's not a conspiracy. It's right here in the news. They said they're going to be meeting and what they're going to be talking about. You conspiracy people.
Now there's the sigh. All right. Worked it in.
See, it has to be. It's a naturally occurring event. NewWorldNextWeek.com is your one and only source for Corbin Report DVDs, Monarchy radio plays, and t-shirts and hats and hoodies that help support both of our works and keep us fear-free and ad-free. James, that is episode 555. That's a lot.
Let's do it again. See you next time.
All right. Cool. Thanks, buddy.
Take care.